Good morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And like the preceding show, we're very interested, as particularly as Canadians, is what is going on with the flotilla off the coast of, I believe, Crete. And we're going to be talking to a spokesperson in, at the half hour, at 11:30. We'll be it's called the Samud Flotilla, and listeners are now more and more aware of this, but there is, of course, the Canadian aspect of this is quite important because we have a humanitarian effort. It's been actually years long, really laudatory, heroic effort by conscientious people around the world, including many, many Canadians. I think of David Heap and others who worked on this, and by sending flotilla of humanitarian aid, which should be simple and accessible, no questions asked, instead is turned into a bizarre performance of power and lawlessness, actually, by State of Israel and its allies. The main role of the negative role of the allies, such as they are, including Canada, is that crime of indifference or looking away and having state priorities, reasons of state, which are not gone into, but which is understood from the top of our political culture to the bottom, so that our media never says, isn't destructive, is a little immoral, isn't it, not to have anything to say? And then if a Canadian is in jeopardy in international waters, does the Canadian government do the bare minimum of providing the assistance that every Canadian is supposed to, is assumed to have some rights, and it should not cause great damage to the state to exercise its duties towards Canadians and others? This situation is, as they say, is off the island of Crete, and involves a large number of individuals. The number won't come to me. I think it's 180. There are many boats. They do have humanitarian aid. It is a conscientious thing. The world knows the name Gaza, and Gaza has been a bloody sticking point in human affairs now for decades. It's not going away, despite the golden magic of the marvelous man from Mar-a-Lago, who can solve every problem with a snap of his fingers, and particularly if the pockets of dear friends are filled. But it is an ugly situation where the ships have been captured, or some, and the people have been, two individuals have been taken to Israel, kidnapped to Israel, is the appropriate word. They were in Greek waters, and they were taken to an Israeli court. The magic word always employed is that the allegation of affiliation, association with terror, humanitarian aid is now a clear manifestation of that. Outrageous. I have to tell you at this hour, I don't know the opinion of Avi Lewis on this issue. He's the one person that we would all expect now in New Times, the New Democratic Party, that this should be one that as it would be in his wheelhouse, speaking of baseball terms, and like that of Mr. his exemplary forebear in North America, Mr. Mamdani, the mayor of New York, has done the right thing. Do the right thing is probably should be our motto. In the previous interview, I heard one of the participants ask, why are you there? And they used the expression, you have to do the right thing. And so if someone can enlighten me, if I'm not up to date on the position of Avi Lewis, they can tell us. We have an hour-long show. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. And as I say, we will be speaking to a spokesperson for the Sumud. This is a new word for me, Sumud Flotilla, at 11:30. And let's move to the story that is also burning up the news. And I worked, as people probably know, as an investigator for some distinguished lawyers, and David Jacobs and Peter Zadek and John Philpott, T. Van Dixon, and Ramsey Clark. And, well, my point is that evidence is kind of important, and the direct stuff is better than the other. I really don't appreciate what happens to me when I watch mainstream media, because instead of evidence, I get people who interpret evidence. So here's what is being said today, and I get this from Sarmeen Narwani of The Cradle. If you're not familiar with her, I urge you to follow her. She has the following available. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard, I think it's Council, solidifies maritime grip as a new map defines Iranian area of control in Strait of Hormuz. And this is their position. That is not to say it's the only position or it is the most accurate, but this happens to be a party to the quarrel. And you do want to know what the parties are saying. You can go outside and find a CBC reporter who talked to somebody who's an expert and has a personal friend and lives in Tehran, and they phone them once in a while, and therefore they can get right to the bottom of it, and you don't have to bother with facts. So anyway, here's how it reads. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, what do you know, unveiled a new operational map on Monday, today's Monday, formalizing its military jurisdiction over critical segments of the Strait of Hormuz. The designated area of control, as published by Zanim News Agency, is bounded by two strategic maritime lines. The first connecting the western tip of Keshim Island of Umm Al Quwain in the United Arab Emirates, and the second stretching from Kuu Mubarak to the waters south of Fujairah. This announcement serves as a direct challenge to the U.S. naval blockade of Iranian ports that has been in place since 13 April, following the collapse of the Islamabad peace talks. The current dual blockade with U.S. forces targeting Iranian shipping and the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps restricting broader Gulf traffic has crippled global energy flows since the U.S. and Israel war against Iran began on 28 February. Although Donald Trump recently extended the ceasefire deadline at Pakistan's request, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps warned that any foreign military presence within these newly defined zones will be met with immediate force. And that's, what did the guy just say? And that's the news today. It's very important to know the position of the Islamic Republic. because otherwise you're sort of on that political trampoline with Trump, where every other day you're tossed in a different direction. It's very important. It's if you were watching two prize fighters and one of them was walking around the ring, shouting at the crowd and showing his muscles and doing backflips, which, by the way, does happen in professional boxing. I've seen each of those things. You might want to notice there's another guy in the ring, and you'd probably want to keep your eye on him as well. And we do that. By the way, this, as I say, the source for this is Sharmeen Narwane, and of course The Cradle, which is a very reliable, very smart source. And people always ask those questions: gee, where do I go for information? There's no place that you could say, oh, that's the place. One of the places that you want to make sure you know what they're saying is The Cradle. And another, by the way, to mention, and if you're looking for background on the situation that I alluded to earlier, or well, it's reported on, and we're going to be talking to someone about, the situation of the flotilla. Chris Hedges has an excellent article today. Chris Hedges is very close to the leaders of this flotilla operation, and his heart is in it. He's very competent, a man who, I'd say, martyred his career in a sense. He developed such a strong conscience that he was no longer welcome at major news sites, though he was highly distinguished as a journalist, and he has actually just gone on being himself, and he thinks it's his duty to get it right. So he also thinks it's our duty to do the right thing. At any rate, he has a piece today filling in quite a lot of detail, the information on two individuals who were captured by the Israelis 900 kilometers from Israel in international waters off Crete and taken to Israel. One is a Brazilian, and the other is a Spanish citizen, Sayed Abu Keshak. And we'll learn more about them later, but Chris Hedges discusses them at some length. And on doing the right thing, once again, Spain and Mayor Mamdani, I can't give you a long list, but Spanish have spoken out about this, the Spanish government. They're getting closer and closer to quite a serious run-in with Donald Trump. Trump is he's threatened them and he's claimed he's done things to them, but they seem to be sailing along quite well, actually. Who could think of a country in the world which would come under attack by Trump that wouldn't value a leader who answers back? Because Trump deals in language which is designedly humiliating. He wants you to bow, and he wants you to scrape, and he isn't a king, but where bowing and scraping started. But it's very important to him that people be humiliated. It's almost like the trick in the Charlie Chaplin film where the Mussolini figure has to have a chair bigger and higher than the guy next to him. And I think, well, now that I remember, they're in a barber shop, and he insists on the barber lifting his chair higher than the other guy. And basically, that's Trump. You know, push me up a little higher. If I remember right, he bumped his head on the ceiling. And you can consider that a metaphor for what goes wrong with people whose nation and their egos explode, take them places they hadn't been before. They didn't realize that being officious and arrogant land them in places they didn't actually think they would land. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. It's probably a good place for me to mention the title of a book by Peter McFarlane. And it's just come out, and it's called Last Call for Canada, Sovereign Nation or Vassal State. Periodically, such books have happened in our history. Some months back, I read aloud from Farley Mowat, and that was exactly his thesis. And, of course, the quote on the back of the book says, I want to make Canada the 51st state, close quote, Donald J. Trump. And this, well, actually, I'll read the explanation. In 1966, George Grant's Lament for a Nation described how Canada was becoming a vassal state to the USA. 60 years later, we are being threatened by the US president for the complete absorption into a new American empire. Resistance is possible, but Americans have the power to make the cost of genuine Canadian sovereignty very high, very quickly. Canada would exist in its own mind, disappearing from the world stage, becoming the appendage of a larger and more ruthless power. One thing is certain. Canadians cannot afford to be naive about the process that is underway. And I got to say, Peter McFarlane, wonderful journalist, I believe Canadians know that, I would say, even more than he does. There is a palpable sense of the menace, and the ordinary Canadians know what they think, and they have their eye on the leaders. But that's always been so, because, of course, Canadians are Canadians. All this stuff about working in NATO, going to the European Union, and voting en bloc against anything from the East, keeping our eye on the Russians, being suspicious of the Chinese, that's supposed to be our political DNA, but most of the population don't understand that addendum, and would rather wish that we would take stock of every situation from our own point of view and do it every day of the week rather than phoning Washington or laying low, which is they're laying low at the moment, for example, on the flotilla. Just to finish this out, Peter McFarlane is an author, journalist, and editor whose published works include Family Ties, How a Ukrainian Nazi had a living witness link, Canada to Ukraine Today, and From Brotherhood to Nationhood, George Manuel and the Making of the Modern Indian Movement. He lives in the Laurentians, north of Montreal. We have had him as a guest on this show. Very, very smart, very able journalist, and we will look forward to talking to him. I think it's a book apropos of our times. Another headline, and we've been working on this subject, working in the sense of trying to call attention to this issue of the growing matter of Germany, Japan, and other states beginning to develop their own policies. And I'll remind you, who did we fight in World War II? Well, primarily those two countries, Germany and Japan. And now we have this little kerfuffle where it is being reported, like, you know, the silly pup report, you might call it, of, oh, Trump is mad at Mr. Merz, Prime Minister of Germany, because Mr. Merz was unimpressed with the outcome of the issue with I shouldn't call it the outcome, the ongoing stupidity and danger of the situation in Iran. And therefore, Trump has withdrawn 5,000 troops from Germany. You'll notice that nobody ever says, why are there 5,000, why are there any troops in Germany? And it's taken as, boy, is that natural. We have a lot of U.S. military in Germany. Guess another place, wow, another place where we have a lot of troops is Japan. And we had this boogeyman, the terrible Russians and the terrible Chinese. They did have troops. The Russians had troops all over Asia, and coming to the end of the World War II, they were our allies. The loss of life was two-thirds loss of life to civilians was caused by Germany, Japan, and also the loss of life in defeating them was provided by the soldiers of China and the Soviet Union. You can say Russia, China. And we were allies, and there was an agreement, and it led to a beautiful institution, and it is the United Nations. United Nations Charter is a very beautiful document, actually. People want to throw it in a ditch because they say, oh, well, it isn't being implemented. Hang on to the blasted document, moron, because you're going to have to fight for that again. Putting it plainly, it's not a toy. And the SOBs who created this situation have to be defeated. So at any rate, what's behind this? Well, Trump is actually aiding and abetting what has been going on, the rearming of Germany. The last 12 months, if you were looking at the news, has been all the talk about how Germany's got to come back and do its usual duty. What duty would that be? Their duty is not to be a superpower. Their duty is to remain an undangerous state that is, doesn't engage in offensive military operations and doesn't provide offensive weapons to other states. This is how Germany has historically found itself having fun and then having a disaster. And so it shouldn't be just treated as a little eye blink. And it's nothing to do with Iran and a little kerfuffle between Trump and Merz. That's ridiculous. Watch it. Look at the trend. The trend has been the unleashing of Germany. When the attack was made on Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia, look it up. I realize that's this. Younger people may not remember. There was a Yugoslavia. And when Serbia was attacked, the Chancellor Kohl was thrilled, absolutely thrilled. You can find quotes in which he was using some very famous old words called Sieg, and I think they left out the Heil. But they were very pleased that they got to use German fighter planes against the Serbs. And everybody thought, isn't that great? Germany's just joined the struggle for democracy. That's hilarious, pal. And now they want to do even more. And so you can see what Merz is going to say. Well, Trump doesn't trust us. We're going to have to really speed up what was already being sped up. He might get a call from Putin, President Putin of Russia. And President Putin might ask him, why don't you complete the investigation of who blew up your pipeline? You remember when you were getting all that really high-quality fuel from a pipeline the two of us had negotiated, and mysteriously someone blew it up. And you gentlemen never found out who it was. Why don't you go ahead and say who it was? Because most of us remember that the foreign minister of Poland, the day it was blown up, said, God bless USA. And you say, really? USA? We're a bunch of suckers, you know, when we put up with all this. But at any rate, I wouldn't, obviously what we would all like is peace in Europe. And that would mean Berlin talking to Moscow, actually, very simply, and avoiding this game. But the game as played by the current rulers of Germany and the current rulers of the United States is to always define Russia as an adversary, no matter what it does. If it's sound asleep and has no phone, it's still a great evil menace, and we have to all get ready, which is shows an atavistic tendency in us. We are deeply phobic about something to the east. We probably ought to ask Carl Jung what this is all about. But it's there. And the United Nations, which was the result of the victory over Nazi Germany, said we were going to cooperate. And it said that Germany was not going to rearm. It was not going to have mass weapons of mass destruction. It wasn't going to export them. But if we're going to define Germany differently as the armorer and the visible representation of Western civilization, that means they're going to supply everybody who wants to be an ally of theirs, as they did in the past. And the result will be something that you should not wish for. I know people, another atavistic thing is people say, well, I hope they get their comeuppance. Please don't talk about what happens. Moving us to Japan, every year it is remembered that Hiroshima and Nagasaki happened. And there's a solemn moment and everybody's silent and then there's a gong sounded and their speech is given. Nobody ever says, who dropped the bomb? And Japan is showing signs of really distinct, we don't have to wait around. They're showing signs of accelerating their offensive capacity, which means they're outside the barrier, outside the limits that they agreed to themselves. So people who have alien political elements, I mean alien to the UN Charter, are now running the place. And they've just brought back the old Japanese military titles because they know that'll give them a little oomph. I mentioned it on last week's show. The Taylor Report does this, by the way, and hey, I'll just say, we do fundraising at the end of the month. We're the ones who talk about it. I'm not seeing any anxiety from our state and our parties over this militarization process. Why? Well, because they see Japan as an important ally against someone they define as an adversary. That would be our ally from World War II, the People's Republic of China. When I say ally, they had millions more casualties than we did in defeating a really powerful Japanese military machine. And they are vigilant. Maybe we're not vigilant because our homes didn't get burned down, because nobody practiced their chemical weapons on us. Nobody practiced the torture systems to experiment on human flesh to see what would happen the way the Japanese did. They had a whole operation, legendary. We'll go into it on the Taylor Report because I'm tired of people being either ignorant of it or silent about it, because the people who did that are once again being brought up in profile by the current prime minister. They have a liberal party, they call it, in Japan. If you look at the history of modern Japan, the only ruling party has been that party. And now they have become militaristic. In violation of the terms which Canada was party to, and we're supposed to, you know, if you tell people the speed limit's 45 and the guy keeps going by at 70, you're supposed to say, you're supposed to do the officer who says, you're going to have to go back to 45. We'll pull you over. And I think we'll take a break here. That's my, you know, the thesis. Japan and Germany are being rapidly rearmed, and this is contributing to the larger crisis. By the way, I'm going to pose all these things as questions to Avi, because are you going to be Cold War NDP and do the same old thing, paint by numbers, or are you going to show us something fresh and new, the way the New York mayor has done? We're going to take a little mute break. We'll just for the shake your little minds up. We'll play something from the Islamic. No, we're not. We have the guest with us. No. So we're going to. I'm sure Pedro has found some music, and we'll take a little break, and we'll come back.